Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd. This is Greg Blaze. On today's show, I'm joined by the wonderful Homa Bashtaki of White Mustache Yogurt. Thank you so much, Homa, for coming on the show.
It is my pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. For those of us who haven't had the pleasure of trying or knowing about White Mustache, Homa started her company alongside her dad, who has a really amazing white mustache that's the namesake of the company. She focuses on traditional techniques and small batches, making yogurt the way her Iranian grandparents made it. One of the things I love most about White Mustache is that Homa has really championed whey as a thing worth celebrating and enjoying. I want to talk about whey a little bit more after the break, but for now, I wanted to talk about your yogurt, Homa, and your company. Why did you start to make yogurt in the first place?
I don't really know if it was an intentional start point. Like, we always made yogurt in our family, and my dad always made it at home. And I just took, it was just something that was always there that I took for granted. And it was only when I moved away to college or, like, would get homesick that I would even make it for myself. Kind of, like, and also, like, just because I was a little cheap. Like, I was a college student with very little money, and I knew I could make my own yogurt for a lot less than I could buy it for. And then what made us start it as a business is that I had found myself during the 2009 crash. I had gotten laid off. I was living with my parents at, like, the ripe old age of, like, 35. And I, like, you know... Yeah, I would like nothing, you know, to do. And me and my dad have always been really tight, but he's also getting, like, a little older. And as parents get older, it's kind of hard to, like, talk to them about regular things. And so I was like, we need an activity. So
yeah,
so subconscious. Like, I picked the one thing that we knew how to do well and that I knew it wouldn't take, like, rocket science. Like, it was just, like, in our DNA. And so it was really unintentional, and my dad and I started making it in this beautiful Egyptian, like, restaurant that was in, like, a strip mall near their house in California. And we just started selling it at farmers markets, and it was just a way to spend time with my dad, and that's how it started enterprise, you know.
Yeah, well, I was also cheap and poor when I was in college, and I went to work for a butcher, and I eventually became a cheese man because I figured the closer I was to the food and selling it, the less times I had to pay for it. And that was my thing. And I also believe that food brings people together. And yeah, our folks.
Right.
And what's up? Are you there?
I'm here. Sorry.
What the hell was that? I don't know. but I actually like to have food as a medium to talk to my folks too. I think that's really cool. What were you doing in 2009? You said before the crash, what were you, like, running a Ponzi scheme or something like that? Were you cheating the economy, or what's going on?
No, I was a cog in a wheel at a very big law firm in New York City, and I had, you know, I had practiced law. I was working at Sidley Austin in securities and derivatives. The entire market had crashed. All of our clients had stopped, like, giving any work to us, and we just It was just a big, massive layoff. And I actually enjoyed being an attorney. Like, as an immigrant kid, I feel like I checked all the boxes, went all to the right schools, and, like, finally had this thing that I defined as success. And the minute I got laid off, though, like, there was something in me that I just couldn't go back into the legal field. So it was a time of self-discovery after the 2009 crash. But before then, I was a associate doing this, like,
doing stuff. Well, that little thing that you felt that was like your soul saying, thank you for letting me out. That's the best decision you ever made. And anybody who's ever eaten your yogurt is super happy that you decided to not be a lawyer, which there are lots and lots and lots and lots of, and instead make the best yogurt I've ever had. And there are very, very, very few people who do that. And I know you know your yogurt because I lived on it. Homa and I were together out in L.A. Building Eataly, working like vampiric hours together, which is awesome. And I got to know her a little bit better. And she also fed me all the time whey and yogurt. I literally lived off of these things as I was working overnight. And through that, I really, you know, I'd had your yogurt a couple of times because it sells out at Eataly when we, certainly as soon as we get it. I managed to pilfer a few jars here and there, but then I started eating it regularly. And then I realized that it's on a different level from mostly everything you see in the supermarket for a lot. But I want you to talk to me a little bit about what makes it so special. Like, what makes it that good? Are you just, like, you know, a magician, or what the hell? What the hell's going on there?
I'm no more or less a magician than anyone else who's actually making yogurt at home. I think the only thing I'm doing differently is I'm really keeping the integrity of that technique and that process on a commercial level. Like, even on our retail jars, they're still made in relatively small batches, and they're made in, like, using, like, the same technology that we use, like, at home. And when I say technology, I'm talking about, like, heated milk, which holds its, like, thermal energy really well, gravity, and that's about it, you know? Like, it's really, like, there is no intention to scale. There is no concern about volume. It's just, like, every single jar is treated like it's a piece of art. And in the sense that it's, like, coming from, like, milk, which is, like, an animal's mother's milk. And it's, like, this beautiful ingredient that does magical things. Like, I don't need to do magical things. I just need to honor these things, which is, like, the milk and the probiotics and letting them come to life together and being really patient about it and, like, not ambitious, not on a rush to have it be anything other than it is. And so I think the only thing I do different than other yogurt makers is just honor that process and not get in the way.
But also, you respect the product's ingredients. So you use ingredients that you select. And I know for a fact that all milk is not created equal, you know, because I sell milk in a lot of different forms. So I think that that's true. I think that the integrity that you pay attention to and that you maintain in your process, definitely the deconstructing nature of how, who I know you to be, bringing it down to those simple elements is there. But the milk has something to do with it, where you get it and how it is, correct?
Oh, yeah. It's the number one ingredient. Like, if you don't start out with great milk, you're already kind of like your yogurt's going to be as great as your milk is. And what's fascinating is once we did start with Eataly LA, we noticed that the milk was so different, like West Coast cows versus East Coast cows. And we've identified, like, some, you know, pretty great farmers and great milk on both coasts. So to just taste the difference of these, like, superlative milks in the yogurt is so fascinating. And also, like, that difference in taste is what inspires different things to do with it. So now we can maybe, like, you know, take advantage of some of the California citrus fruits or berries or natural produce to kind of go with that milk in a way that we're not inspired. Like in New York, it's more like tart berries and cherries and like, uh-huh. you know, the whole line is very Middle Eastern, but also like it's very American. Like our milk is local and it inspires where you go with that. And the coast, the West Coast and East Coast have really taught us that.
Well, that's what America is all about. Taking where you're from and, you know, making yourself who you are. At least that's what I was taught America is. We all came from somewhere, and we come here, and we become who we are, I hope. What's the difference between West Coast and East Coast milk? That's really interesting. So does it taste differently to you?
Yes. So it tastes differently to me in the sense that so the West Coast has like a milder climate, and so the cows are eating mm-hmm. more grass here, through like fresh green yeah. grass throughout the year. And on the East Coast, they're eating more hay. And so there's like a slight, like in New York, I love noticing the difference between the seasons of milk. Like the summertime right. milk would be a little richer and like creamier, and then the wintertime milk yeah. would not be the same, but like also the taste would be like different. Like I would look forward to wintertime milk because it would be just slightly a little tarter. And the West Coast has just like this very sweet, creamy, buttery milk. And producers here are allowed to not homogenize their milk as strongly as the East Coast is. So that's an added perk.
That's big. Homogenization, like pasteurization on some level, like, you know, gentle pasteurization, I understand, especially for people that aren't on the farm or you, when you're buying your milk from a source, you don't know the blades of grass. Gentle pasteurization is a safety thing, and it also is something that we have to do, unfortunately, to sell cheese, which breaks my heart. But homogenization is bad for the flavor, and I think it's also bad for you. To be drinking things that are homogenized because your body doesn't really know what to do with it. It just sort of sits there. And that's one of the best things about yogurt for me is it's all jump-started with all of those cultures, and I am such an ill person. I have such a bad stomach now that really helps me. It helps my digestive processes, and it makes me feel better. So now everybody knows that, which was super important for everybody to know my gastrointestinal problems.
Well, and you and like home cooks that are listening have so much more freedom when they make their yogurt at home to pick, like yeah. start off with raw, unhomogenized milk of any yeah. mammal. Like and you know, we are tied to laws that require us to pasteurize and homogenize milk, and it's so yeah. frustrating. The homogenization for aesthetic reasons.
Do you ever make raw milk yogurt at home?
I have, yes. I think it's getting a good source of it that's difficult.
What's the major difference in that product? Like between raw milk yogurt and pasteurized milk, like what do you notice as the maker and as a person who's eating it? That's the major difference there.
So the major difference is in when you incubate it, the layer of cream rises to the top of a raw mm-hmm. milk yogurt. And then once you've set your yogurt and you want to get it either strained or not strained, once you mix the yogurt stays pretty uniform, but it has like a creamier, more buttery taste to it. That would be the main difference that I noticed.
That's awesome. So your yogurt is special, but because you know where you get your milk, you keep your processes simple, you honor the processes that you use, and you're patient and smart, and you don't rush that, and you aren't concerned with how much you make and how much you get. It's because it comes from something different, right? I mean, making yogurt right. was and is something you said that brings you closer to your dad, and it helps you communicate, and it also helps to sustain you. In times when money is tight. So all of that is your philosophy as a human being, as I know you and why I love you. But, it's good that people know that. Because there's a lot of shitty yogurt out there, to be honest,
Right. And I think, I think if you, or me, when I entered a market that turned out to be like quite saturated, like the yogurt market is, and how much difficulty we had in maintaining our technique and maintaining the way that we make yogurt. Like, it, every batch is an advocacy effort. Like, I know, like, you know, it's nice to talk about the milk and like how much I love it and our sources of fruit and everything. But I also know, like, there are a million things that I can do better. And it's focusing on the million things that I can do better that is going to, like, make everything better. Like, you know, like, farms aren't used to people asking for raw, unhomogenized milk or pushing for it, because it's like you're met with, like, an entire wall of bureaucracy that prohibits you from going through that. But I think, like, that's where the energy and the effort needs to be put. So I use, like, whatever resources I have to kind of, like, recognize that we can always do something just a little bit better. And that's where, like, the real kernel of, the beauty of running a food business is. So
that's where the magic is, see, because you can stand out there with a picket sign and bitch and complain about anything and everything, or you can make something that's marginalized and, in cases like yours, legislated against. And you feed it to people, and they're like, holy Moses, this is the best thing I've ever had. And then you're like, yeah, I wish I could give you more, but, you know, I can't. And then that makes them ask questions, I think. Or that's why I like to do what I do and offer as much raw milk cheese to people and get all that information out there. But in order to really get your message across and get what you got, you know, do what you got to do, you have to make the good stuff.
Absolutely.
And you definitely do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have a question, and it's actually something that I feel that people need to know, and it's a real simple question, but it gets asked to us all the time at cheese counters, and for some of the cheesemongers that listen, they'll know the answer to this. But what's the difference? What, when people ask for Greek yogurt, which you make some, what's the difference between Greek and, say, Iranian yogurt?
Right. So, I mean, I don't want to bring up any historical grudges between the Greeks and the Iranians. But, like, I mean, the Greek yogurt just hit the market first. And so it's called Greek yogurt. But what we call, you know, in the vernacular of buying yogurt, Greek yogurt is just simply strained yogurt. And so strained yogurt is Greek yogurt. So what that means is you strain the whey out of it, making the yogurt a naturally thicker and denser and creamier.
And a lot
of cultures do it. It's not just the Greeks. Like, the Iranians do it, the Armenians do it, the Turks do it, Lebanese. Like, a lot of Middle Eastern, Northern African cultures, European cultures, they strain their yogurt. And some cultures do it just to get whey, or like to get little nuggets of whey to play with or make other ingredients with. And then we have a batch of yogurt that's unstrained, and that's just regular yogurt. What we call it Iranian yogurt, and that's trying to put our flag down in the market.
Yeah.
But there's the differences between strained and unstrained yogurt. And when you hear Greek yogurt or Greek style yogurt, it's a strained yogurt where the whey has been removed.
Yeah, thank you. Because I think that people get confused because they don't know the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I know
Absolutely.
The difference because
it's very valid.
You know what I mean? Now, I prefer the ones that are unstrained, as you know, because that's the ones that I always have to, you know, my job is to quality control the products of some at Eataly, and I got to really check to make sure your unstrained yogurt is good pretty much every day I come across it, you know.
Right.
I totally don't trust you. I got to make sure this stuff's all right. But I really like that because the texture's better and you can drink it, right? You know, but that's just me.
Right. I feel like when you go into the world of unstrained yogurt, too, that's where your palate is open to going the opposite way most yogurt is, and instead of going sweet yogurt, you go savory yogurt, which is a particular passion of mine. And a traditional way, like a lot of like Middle Eastern cultures, and especially Iranians, have their yogurt savory. And we have this special yogurt called mousir, which is with a shallot And it's so foreign to people. But I love surprising them with the flavors and the versatility of it as an ingredient. So
It's amazing, amazing shit. That's awesome. And I could talk to you for a long, 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 long time just about types of yogurt. But you know, there are other, I got to ask you some other stuff. So I want to ask you, it's really like you persevered in a lot of ways to create the company that you have now, first by making the career jump from a lawyer to making a yogurt for a living, and then by making the move from LA to New York City. Can you just talk a little about the challenges you faced in getting White Mustache off the ground? Was it product-wise? Was it marketing? Was it the law? Or was it your family? Or was it all of the above?
I think it was all of the above. I think the legal challenges we had were the hardest. As we're talking about, like, the idyllic spending time with my dad at Farmer's Market, like, the real story after that is, like, within 3 months, California shut me down at the farmer's market because I wasn't using these like 1940s laws that regulate milk, which means that when you make yogurt or any grade A product, like it never touches human hands. And my whole process is about, you know, letting it strain and getting whisked and letting it like incubate over stovetop and like capping it and canning it like each jar by hand, and like that wasn't allowed. And for 2 years after I got shut down, I was like threatened with a $10,000 fine and a year in prison. I was like, this is really messed up. And I had all of this privilege in the sense that like I had gone to law school and I had like had all this education, and you know, my friends hooked me up with like amazing California attorneys who took on the case pro bono. And like, I know it sounds silly, but for like 8 gallons worth of yogurt a week to go to a farmer's market and sell with my dad, I was going up to Sacramento and submitting lab results and talking to like, assemblymen to try to pass bills. And like, after 2 years, it became very clear that like, I was not going to win this battle here in California. And it was so frustrating. And so, like, I picked up my whole life and, like, left my family and went to New York and started White Mustache there. And it was, like, you know, now looking back on it, it was kind of, like, lonely and martyry. But I don't know what possessed me to do it. It was just, like, I had like, found my passion. And it was, like, and I was so angry about what had happened in California because there was no real public health reason for it. And like the proof of it is like, once we got to New York, like never in a million years would I have thought that you and Italy would have called to ask me to be in like Flatiron and the World Trade Center Italy stores, much less to be like, look, we're going to help you get back into California. And you guys set up the most beautiful clean room here in California that lets me not only make yogurt, but also prove the point that, like, I can make yogurt in California, and it's awesome. And we're missing out on so much really good food from diverse, beautiful communities of people that just want to make, like, small pockets of, like, their art. And, like, these micro economies that could be highly sustainable, and we're keeping everything out. It's so scandalous and terrible. And I hope that, we went through a lot to get back to California, but I really hope it proves the point that there's room for so many more other amazing food companies to crop up like this.
One thing I love about Italy, and I've been with Italy since beginning, is that Italy affords us the ability to do that because of its affiliations with Slow Food, and because the people who founded the company, like Alex and Adam Saper, who met with you guys that day, and the Bastianich from the Pali Restaurant Group, and Nicola Serenetti, and these and my guy Dino Bori, like, these are people who believe, and I really, really, really am happy that we got to bring you back to Los Angeles to stick it to the government, because they're fools and they don't know what's good for us. Well, they know what's bad for us, and that's what they tell us to eat all of the time. But, you know, if we can win the little battles like that, like you started out with bringing, you know,
this
bringing
isn't a little battle. I mean, Greg, no, this isn't a little battle. This is a huge battle. Like, you've changed, and, like, this whole thing has changed the course of a life of an entire family and an entire, like, tiny little Zoroastrian community here in California, where I've, like, now hired, like, a few people, and it's been, like, incredible. And so it isn't, like, it might be a tiny, but, like, to, like, quite a few of us, it's been life-altering. And, like,
oh, I don't mean it that way. I mean, I respect what you do fully. What I mean, and as, well, what I'm really saying is that any war, and our war is on bad food and stupid legislation, those wars are won by winning all of the small battles. You know what I mean? You can't take on bad legislation in the United States government all at once. No one wins that way. You have to get yourself in there, get the proper education, find yourself in the right spot, and have the passion and the perseverance to fight those little battles one at a time until you can make that change. At least that's how I try to operate, and I think that that's how we like to operate together. So
I certainly didn't mean it in that way. Right, and find like-minded people and listen to them and really, like, follow the advice of people who've come before you and failed. I feel like sometimes the failures that have come before us can inform us the most on how, like, the next, like, I hope, like, there's, like, the next generation of yogurt makers that are going to do it better than I do. And I can't wait for them.
What's your advice to those people, folks who want to follow in your footsteps? I have to tell you, anybody that's listening that wants to get Homer's yogurt, you can only get it in a couple places in New York City and at Eataly Los Angeles right now. But for those people who want to do things like you do, specifically make yogurt or even just make yogurt at home, what's your major piece of advice to them?
I think my number one piece of advice, whether it's as small as making a batch in your own kitchen or as big as, like, you know, trying to launch a business, is just focus on the product. Like, focus on the integrity of your product and make that paramount above everything else.
That's awesome. Well, look, guys, we're going to take a short break. Because we talked for a long time, and we have to take a little break. That's how we do things. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the byproduct of Homer's yogurt, which is the whey. So hang out with us for a minute.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh, and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the Farmstead Cheese Company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious, stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sertori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
All righty. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. Before the break, I was chatting with Homa Dashtaki about her company White Mustache and about the fantastic yogurt she produces. And we're talking about our love for restrictive laws and, you know, just how wonderful it is to drink, you know, heavily pasteurized and homogenized milk and then make crappy yogurt out of that milk. Really good time. But now I want to check out a little bit of a different thing. And this part of the episode, I want to talk about whey. As cheese people and as people who are regular listeners to this podcast, we know whey is the liquid byproduct of the cheese-making process. but whey is also a byproduct of making yogurt. But to you, Homer, it's more than a byproduct. Can you talk a little bit about what whey is for you?
So in yogurt making, I think it's a little different than cheese making, because to me, sure, the whey is just the yin and yang of yogurt. It's still yogurt. And we have to give it a different name because it's just yogurt in a different form. And that's the liquid form, okay, where we're draining out yogurt of this clear golden elixir, which, like, you know, you call it like yogurt water, because it's just the liquid in the yogurt that's full of calcium and probiotics, but none of the solids. So all the solids still stay in your straining cloth. So in the thick, creamy yogurt that becomes Greek yogurt. But the whey is this like very potent, very versatile new ingredient that you will have on your hands. And for us, we just drank it because we liked it. And when you're making it at home, you don't get like a lot, that much of it. So it's great for your digestion. It's incredibly hydrating. But now that we're making it commercially, we have like quite a bit of whey on our hands. And so back in 2014, we made a commitment to not to increase our volume of producing yogurt. So we curbed our own growth until we found a market for the whey. So we've been selling drinks, we've been selling popsicles, we've been doing brine buckets, and there's so many different things that you can do with whey. Like, there are so many things you can do with yogurt. But I actually find whey to be so exciting and light, and you can, like, you know, I think you could do more things with it than you can with yogurt.
Was it difficult to convince people to try the whey?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think I was like a little cavalier about it because I knew what it was and I was familiar with it. I was like, drink it. It's delicious. You'll love it. And a lot of people
were
like,
screw that. I'm not drinking this.
Yeah, they were like, what is that? Why is it that color? And it is. It's like this neon yellow color because of the riboflavin B12 vitamins in the milk. And that's like, you know, that's just the color of the whey. So it's like this neon yellow liquid. And people like, they're like, oh, it's from yogurt. I don't know if I like it. And so we like failed in our first like iterations of it because we just put it in like a 1 liter bottle and was like, drink it. It's awesome. And people were like, no.
I'm not drinking that.
Right. People who were receptive to it were like bartenders. Like, bartenders were the most receptive to make funky drinks and experiment with it. And then chefs as well to like brine with it or bake with it, which is exciting.
What everything that you can do is whey? You can brine turkeys in it. I know that. Why is it so good for that? What does it do?
And because the whey, just like yogurt, is very acidic. And if you put poultry or pork into the whey to brine like overnight or like a pork chop for a few hours, the meat takes on, like, gets tenderized by the acidity of the yogurt whey. And it also like infuses it with like a lemony tang. And like with a pork chop, like your pork chop even tastes creamier because of that. And with your turkey or chicken, the sugars that are in the whey also help give like a nice golden brown crust to the skin.
Yeah.
So it's like fascinating. Awesome.
Well, this to me also, because, you know, if you're being familiar with the cheese making process, you know, really simply, you know, you take the milk, you acidify it, coagulate it, the curds and whey split, boom. You have whey that sometimes is turned into ricotta by reheating it. You know, I always equate it to like scraping the jar that you have a jar of peanut butter and it looks empty, but you can still see some clinging. You're like scraping a little bit more. And that's what ricotta is to me. You know, it's just getting a little bit more out of the whey. And then usually that is either thrown away, which is not good, or it's fed to animals. Pigs love it. And then they take those pigs and they make ham out of it. And could you make ricotta out of the yogurt whey if you wanted to?
No. No.
Why is that?
I don't think. I think because there's no solids for it to hold on to.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's cool, man. Yeah, the whey beverages I really thought were cool. The people who are listening that like are like, what the hell are you guys talking about? It is. It's like initially this liquid looks a little funky only because it's almost green. Juice WRLD is golden, but it looks almost green in the bottle. And people are like, huh. Even though those people regularly drink Gatorade that is like bright blue and, you know, that looks like Windex, I am guilty of that myself. And like these awful colored, these drinks, it's so pure. I think that people are put off by it because they're so used to drinking things that don't look like that. But, the whey beverages that Homa makes are awesome. She does one with pineapple, and then the ginger one, like they're just really good. They're really refreshing. And then also you're going to make popsicles out of them sometimes, right? In your freezer or something like that was like, that was something I wanted to do myself. I froze some of your pineapple whey and turned it into ice cubes in my refrigerator, which I thought was really awesome. I just put them in my water. You can do all of that, right?
Right. You can use those ice cubes as well if you're making a punch or a cocktail. You can turn them into little popsicles as well. And like it's good for kids with like, you know, the digestive issues or with like if you're sick or you're elderly or you want something easy to go down, like it's really light.
Right.
We learned with the drinks that adding like tart fruity flavors to it, like just pineapple juice or passion fruit juice or honey lime, makes it really like pop a little bit. And with the popsicles, like our brand is like a little, you know, it's like a father-daughter team who started it. Now my sister's roped in and my mom's roped in. And, like, it's like this very nostalgic thing. So we put the popsicles in, like, these old-school, like, Otter Pop-style gourmet, you know.
Yeah. So, I love that.
So we're trying to have a little fun with it. And also, you know.
I suffer, like, my body, I treated it like an amusement park for a long time, and now it doesn't work like it used to. But when you started feeding me the whey, I was energized and my stomach felt better. And all of that massive amount of like probiotic cultures that are good for your guts are in the whey. And it was light. Like it has the appearance of being thick and almost viscous. And then when you drink it, it's not like that at all. And the tart flavors, they really appeal to me. And most of the stuff you do, I'd say that there isn't a single product I've had in your tiny little line that I wouldn't, completely be gluttonous with if I had the opportunity. I know people who may or may not own the company that immediately buy cases of the yogurt as it comes in from into Italy. It's just, that's how good your stuff is. And I love your philosophy and just everything that you said, you know, like it's interesting when you're dedicated to something, and you're in it, you know, your head is in it. Like you're in the pot, you're in the field, you're into the cheese making vat, like whatever you're into, you know, all of those philosophies come out through the work that you do. And you are a person that really, inspired me, just to try to be better at my own craft because you're so good, your stuff is so awesome, but yet you're hyper self-critical, and I can understand that as well, you know. But you're gonna give yourself a break, right? Come on.
I can't. It's funny as you were talking. I'm like, I don't know. I could do so much more with the whey, and I could use some advice on like who the I just need some. I was like, I'm not doing enough. So it's so funny you said that. It was like running through my head, but
of course it was. That's
I give myself a break as I surround myself with more help. So we're just now looking for more help because I know that I can't do it. Like now it's come to the point where it really does take a village. And people out there are smarter than me. And I'd like to hear what they have to say.
Well, you know, Homa, man, it's a, it's great to be able to work with you. I'm really glad that that you got in, you know, that we were able to help you out, that Italy was able to help you out, and that, you know, that you just make great yogurt and that it's available and that you're out there and you get to do, you know, you might have been a good lawyer, and I'm sure you were, because I've argued with you late at night, and I understand that you're really good. But I think if you believe in that sort of thing, that this is your path, this is the way you were supposed to go, and I hope you agree with me.
I do. I feel very lucky to have found it. So thank you for your support.
Matt, thank you for your awesome stuff. And I want to say thank you to all of you people who listen to this awesome podcast. Check out White Mustache and check out Homa. Come to Italy, LA. Go find it in Brooklyn. Find it in New York. Find the Way Pops. Find everything she's got and keep eating them. And then keep listening to this podcast.
Give us feedback. Please. Give us tons of feedback. We welcome everyone's opinion.
Yeah. Thanks, Homa. And thanks for listening. Stay tuned next week for more Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Ever wonder what kind of podcast Julia Child would have made? Probably would have been one where she introduced you to all of her latest discoveries and favorite people. And that's exactly the tradition we're following on Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. Join me, Todd Shulkin, your host, and the Foundation's Executive Director, as I bring you inside the Foundation's world to meet the bright lights of today's food universe, just as Julia used to do from her own famous kitchen. New episodes air on Heritage Radio Network, Wednesdays at noon Eastern. Listen in.